The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. All accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
Oh, nothing. Tuesday?
Yeah.
Just day that doesn't count.
A little sluggish out there. It's tax day. I know it's tax day. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you don't...
Tax day for me is about February 10th.
Yeah.
So I need the money.
I don't even know if I've done my taxes.
Oh, great.
Well, your wife does.
Yeah, my wife does. I don't know if she did it or asked for an extension.
You probably are really annoying to do taxes for because you have the quarter of a billion listeners.
Yes.
You've got that tax form.
Yes. I got all kinds.
You've got us.
Yes.
You've got any station appearances that people want to go and hire you out for.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Do you also do birthday parties, bar mitzvahs and weddings?
All kinds of stuff out there. Yes, I do it all. And I will do birthdays. For toddlers, too. So I'm like a clown.
You don't even have to get dressed up or painted or anything. Just show up as Arnie.
No, yeah. Today's tax day. Tomorrow we'll be at the UPS store. So come on by, say hello. Excited about that. And, of course, we got trivia tonight. Nice. You're hosting, Brady.
Yes, I'll be there. Trivia. Burger Bar. Colchester. Love that place.
Half-price appetizers.
Half-price appetizers. Drink specials. $2.50 on the Coors Lights. On $2.50 on the Miller Lite Aluminums. $3.00. On the Blue Moon, so you can come and have a great time at an affordable rate, and we've got tons of sports to watch, Celtics and Red Sox on tonight.
Rich, I got to tell you a funny story. Brady and I were playing basketball yesterday.
Oh.
Okay.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Monday night. So I'm surprised Brady comes. He usually doesn't come Monday night.
No, because I don't like Monday
night. He doesn't like the crowd Monday night. So we're playing Monday night, and I'm on the other side of the gym. I don't have my goggles on, which is prescription for me to really see.
Which is hilarious to look at, by the way.
And, the guy next to me goes, "Hey, now those are two ballers," and I put up my guy. I go, "What, those two high school kids?" And he's like, "No, they go to UVM." I go, "What?" I'm thinking BFA, UVM High School. I go, "Is there a UVM High School? Is there a UVM High School that I'm not knowing about?" He goes, "No, they played for UVM College. You know, UVM
University of Vermont.
They play that place. I'm like, I go, the two of them combined don't equal my weight. I gotta tell you." Was I taller than both of them, Brady? I'm just right off the bat. Was I taller
than
both of them?
You were taller than one of them.
Wow. Well, the two guys that came out.
Who you had to text me and ask who they were.
Well, because I misunderstood. One was Cam Ward. I'm sure you heard of him.
Of course. He just finished his career.
Sixth man of the year in the America East.
Oh, was he sixth man of the year?
Yes. Yes. He's actually twice the winner of that award.
Do the other teams not substitute? Wow. No, and Dre Wills.
Of course.
Defensive player of the year in the America East last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, now 2 years ago, I guess.
Is he the defensive player of the year at the Williston Central School?
Well, you know, it's funny you bring that up because I thought, you know, because I didn't hear the person. I thought they said that's Trey Bell Haynes. And I'm saying to myself, am I tearing up the America East player of the year? Because I was just destroying him, Brady, after you left. I mean, I was eating him up.
It's funny how you say after I left, you destroyed him.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. As soon as you left and there were no witnesses.
Well, let me tell you, I was on their team for the first two games. We won one, we lost one. I couldn't get off their team fast
enough.
Yeah,
we won. Yeah. My team beat Dre Wills at Cam Ward. That's actually
the truth. You crushed us. You crushed us.
How?
Because
they dominate.
Because guys, this is what people don't understand. Guys that are really, really good that have to dumb down their game for pickup tend to not play that well in pickup because they decide, you know what, I'm going to be nice to these fools and not shoot threes every time and make them.
Or
so I'm
some of them are just not that good.
Oh, stop.
Oh, what?
Dre Wills, like and Cam Ward.
Like, if I was playing with 75-year-olds, I would just shoot from half court every time, and I probably wouldn't play that way.
I will say
that's kind of how they act.
Out of the 30 guys, let's say there were 30 guys there, they were, what, like 14th, 15th, right there in the middle?
No. They were still top 10.
Well, maybe.
I would hope so.
Well, I gave Dre a grade of a C-. But that's passing. That's right?
C passing. Was always cause for celebration.
Right? That's passing. Maybe do a C. I don't want to be harsh. Okay. I mean, you know how sometimes you get married and then like 10 years later your wife gains a whole bunch of weight? I know he played last year, but his game is just, he let his game go.
Talk about it. Something I'm not going to touch.
Well, no, he just let his game go, Rich.
You just keep talking.
I was just shocked. Brady, when you left, I'm telling you, I was hitting three-pointers like they were layups.
Yeah. See, Arnie, I don't mean to break your spirit.
Don't break it. Break away.
Don't you understand that teams have decided that they will... Well, number one, the good players will guard other good players.
No, they keep. They don't. And they guard.
No. The good players will guard the other team's good players. So that knocks out a whole group of people that could guard you.
Okay.
And then when the good players on the other on your team have the ball, everybody else helps off of you.
No, they
to
don't.
Go to them. Well, you end up with more wide open shots than anybody in the gym just by virtue of we're saying, you know what? Let's make Arnie beat us than let anybody else beat
us. I wish I got that many open shots. I purposely wanted to guard Dre because I thought he was Trey Bell Haynes. Because I wanted to go up against some real competition, Rich. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And Dre just isn't that.
I hit a three and turned to him. I go, hey, this ain't Binghamton. You better bring your A game. I said, you ain't playing in the America East, my friend. You're playing Williston Central School. You better have your A game.
Fat, bald guy who stands still for 40 minutes.
I am telling you, I was destroying them with my comments on the side. I was absolutely destroying them. And I got to tell you, they were just like average. They were just average players out there. Yeah. I said, look, guys, come back, but not until you hit the weight room. You know, anytime, come back, but, you know, bulk up a little bit. This 110-pound baloney, that's not going to cut it.
He's going to get sand kicked on him at the beach.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Okay. I mean, I'm thinking me and Brady could have beaten them in the 2-on-2. You know what? I take that back. I know we could have beaten them in the 2-on-2. There's no doubt in my mind.
You and Brady could have beaten Dre Wills and Cam Ward in a 2-on-2. You just heard that, folks. Yeah, that's not a lie. He just said that.
And you want to know something? I think the two buddies that were with them would have agreed with me, saying, yeah, they played bad.
They might beat you 100-0.
No. I'll play with Trimboli, and I know we'll beat them. I'll play with Trimboli.
You already said Trimboli stinks.
54 points.
I'm just telling
terrible.
You. Brady, look, they seem like good guys. I invited them back on Twitter, but don't come back unless you bring your A game. That's all because I'm telling you, sometimes the guys out at Williston Central School are better than some of these guys that play for UVM.
You do realize if those two brought their so-called A game, it would be 50-0 before you blinked.
They would have better chance if they brought the Duncan brothers, okay?
They can't play.
They can't play pickup? They don't?
They can't play pickup. Okay. It would be against, you'd be against compliance.
I didn't know that. Well, you know what? Tell them to bring, what's his face? The big guy, Henson.
Okay.
They'd have a better chance to with him. I think I could pretty much shut him down.
So we'll just get their whole starting five and we'll go against them.
That works for me.
Arnie wants us to
You know, Brady, you just said you beat them, right? You did not beat them?
Arnie, I'll tell you this. Yeah. You want it to be like the Sandlot, which you've never seen, the baseball movie.
Right. I've never seen that.
There's the Sandlot kids against the kids with the nice uniforms.
Oh, I love that.
And the Sandlot kids beat the kids with the nice uniforms. Right. Arnie would like us to go up against, but here's what Arnie wants. Arnie wants the Williston Central All-Stars.
Yes.
Against the recently graduated UVM team. But Arnie, you know what?
Mystic Alaska. Remember, not Mystical. What's the one where Russell Crowe's team plays hockey against the Rangers?
Well, Arnie,
Mystery.
Mystery, yeah. There you go.
Arnie, you wouldn't make the Williston All-Star team, so you wouldn't be in that game.
Wow.
So even if that game ever happened, you wouldn't be in it.
I'd be there for three-point specialty shooting.
Yes. Lodi from Jericho says, Arnie against the Celtics. Why stop at college?
Yeah.
Bring the Celtics in.
I know we're getting a lot on the Tom Fertitta text line, but look, I just want to say they were very nice guys, but I don't expect them seeing them back anytime soon until they work on their
game. They kind of have finals, graduation, professional careers overseas.
If they go play pro, I am quitting this job, and I'm going to play with them, okay? Wow. How about that?
Everybody hopes they go to play pro.
You're lucky I don't quit right now and go find myself a D1 team to play for.
We're lucky.
If I'm shut down the defensive player of the year, the sixth man, and this guy and that guy, I still got it, Brady.
I hear LeVar Ball's got an opening in Lithuania.
I love LeVar Ball. That's my idol.
Match made in hell.
I carry his pictures in my wallet. All right. So anyway, they were nice guys, Rich. They were really nice guys, but unfortunately... you know, their game's gone. Cam Ward, I'm surprised because he stopped playing only a couple of months ago.
Right.
Dre, just wow.
Derek in Middlebury says, a source tells me Arnie went 1 for 10.
Your source is wrong.
From lunch.
Your source
one
is wrong.
10.
Brady, what's coming up on the show today? What's going on?
Remember, mistake of the day. If you find a mistake, you text us in 802-655-6672. Winner at the end of the week gets that baseball cap brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Michelle in Underhill was our qualifier yesterday. Tristan in Williston won it last week. He already has his swag and loves it.
And posted it.
Yes, and posted it on Twitter.
I saw that.
As for what's coming up on the show today, we'll talk about Ohtani against the Sox. We'll do that at 420. Tom Karen of Ness at 435. Dez Bryant wants to play for the Giants? Question mark. Kevin Mensch, former major league player, 8 years a slugger in the major leagues. He'll join us at 520. But first, the Bruins, we weren't expecting a sweep, were we?
It's
2-1 now, Boston, but we weren't expecting a sweep.
I wasn't expecting a sweep, but if they lost, I don't know why I expected if they lost they would be flat. I thought they came out, or I just thought they were flat all around. I expected a better game, but then, as Brady said, I didn't expect a sweep. So if they're going to lose, they were going to lose Game 3 in Toronto. Toronto knows that if they lose Game 3 and go down 3-0, this series is over. So you saw the best of Toronto. You certainly didn't see the best of the Bruins.
No, although you're right. They came out flat that first period, that ridiculous Riley Nash delay of game penalty, which gave Toronto that power play, and then Van Riemsdyk scored late in the first period. And, and then the Bruins came right back. Toronto went ahead. Bruins came right back on the Chara goal. So it was 2-2.
It was a winnable game.
The second period and the third period for the Bruins were vintage stuff. And I know the top line all finished with a combined -7 pointless and -7. But it wasn't from a lack of effort. I mean, they really controlled a lot, long periods of the second two periods of that game.
I mean, I took two things as the major takeaways in this game. The extended shift that the top line had to play in the second period. The game-winning goal by Austin Matthews, with about 5 minutes left in the second period, that was created because that line had played a minute and 31 seconds on the ice rather than the traditional 30 to 45 seconds. I mean, Pasternak just didn't have the energy to get that puck out of the zone. And in hindsight, you look back and say, you know what, rather than try to chip the puck out and not get to it, he should have just stayed in, because that allowed, once Pasternak couldn't keep that puck out of the zone and control it himself, then it was able to cycle right back to the middle, and that's where Austin Matthews lives.
It's so funny you said that, because my son being a goalie, I never hear that crap. I never hear, the defenseman couldn't clear it or that. It's always the goalie's fault. You know what I mean? And by the way, that was a savable shot. It was right to his right
side.
So it's always, why didn't you make the,
though.
The defenseman or the guys can't stop every shot from going through. That's what the goalie's there for. He could have made a save on that one, and that could have saved Pasternak for being so tired, or the rest of the line being tired.
Just watching the replay of that winning, what turned out to be the winning goal, man, it was painful. Those guys, you talk about skating in mud. I mean, it was like watching Arnie play defense. I mean, they were just, especially Pasternak, just standing around.
Well, they were
the
sluggish.
Whole top line.
Yeah.
Nobody. Krug was gassed. There was just, they had nothing, and Toronto knew it.
Well, and the other thing that is going to go, unnoticed, I think, by at least a lot of the fans, and I honestly hadn't realized the impact of it until I really broke down the game after the fact, was the decision by Mike Babcock to put Tomas Plekanec on that second line, a guy who has been largely invisible since they acquired him from Montreal at the trade deadline. They move him up from the fourth line to the second line. He plays 18 minutes or something yesterday, the most he's played since he got to Toronto. And his ability to help shut down Brad Marchand is what helps win this.
Yeah, Marchand.
I don't know that it works every single game for the rest of the series, but it worked yesterday.
Yeah, it did. And Plekanec has always been a pain in the butt to the Bruins defensively. He's not going to score a lot of goals for you, but he's always been tough on Bergeron on the faceoff circle, and he won the majority of drop pucks last night. And it was an injury that put him in that second spot in a second line center, but it certainly worked. And look, I look at this as a fairly inevitable thing when it comes to Stanley Cup playoff hockey. All the more reason I can't believe Vegas won that third game last night, and they're now 3-0. Because what happens when teams go home down 2-0? They almost always win that third game. Yeah, desperation. They play like the hair is on fire. New Jersey. Minnesota, Colorado won their game with Nashville last night out in Denver.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I'm with you. 2-0, I expect the team that has their backs against the wall goes home for the first time to win. But in the NBA, when I was watching the Spurs and the Warriors last night, the Spurs were up at half and had controlled a lot of the first half, and they asked Steve Kerr what's going on. He said, Well, this is what happens. When you dominate game one, you tend to come out and get dominated in game two. And I don't think about it that way in the NBA, but in the NHL, you're right. I'm thinking you win two, you're going to win the third. I wasn't expecting San Antonio to control large portions of the first half against the Warriors. Now, the Warriors ultimately won, but it's interesting that Steve Kerr gives you a pass in game two for playing poorly when we give the Bruins a pass and wait till game three.
Lots on the Tom Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Danny and Colchester, Bruins outshot him 42-30. Toronto can thank Anderson for playing out of his mind. Yeah, and we didn't even bring that up. Yeah,
He was Tim Thomas last night and reminded me a little bit of him. So, yeah, I mean, it's 2-1 the next game. It's still a must-win for Toronto.
Chris said, Chris the Met fan was having a bad day. Thank you so much for making me laugh so hard. And, well, I can't read that part. I love the show. So we'll just go ahead and skip that. I love that. There was another Bruins one that I wanted to get to. I like this one. First time texter, despite the weather, there's an inarguable proof full-on spring is about to bloom when Bruin fans complain about the refs.
Yeah, of course, that wasn't a delay of game, but we'll just... I'm not complaining. I'm just stating fact.
All right, so there you go, getting a lot of Bruin stuff in. We'll get more to it, but right now, series 2-1. Bruin's still in charge, so I wouldn't be too panicked about that one. Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Ohtani against the Red Sox. Wow. What can we expect tonight?
Wow, all that coming up next right here at 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. I know you want to get to Ohtani and the Red Sox. So before the show, I told you that Rizzo of the Cubs said that he was on ESPN 1000 in Chicago, said, you know what, this is crazy, 162 games. I will take less money if we could play less games. They're not going to play less games, but you know what they're going to have to do to make the guys play less? Either increase the roster, which they won't do that. They'll have to go to split seasons when that way a team wins the first half. They could, for the most part, rest their guys for 30, 40, 50 games in the second half if they want, or vice versa. That's the only way you could stop them from playing that many games and still make the money.
And baseball of all sports,
yeah,
with such tradition, such history, and such stat-driven, you know, focus.
That's a grind,
though.
Good luck
with that.
Brady in 162 games, a grind?
Yes,
no, it's horrible.
It's a grind, but I would be okay with taking it down to like 148 game schedule.
Yeah, me too, and I'm a purist one.
Or 144. I would be okay with at 144. Now, yeah. I understand people don't want to lose the money,
right,
and that's why it won't happen, but I would be okay with seeing the playoffs played from the middle of September until the middle of October.
Right, right.
I don't need to see baseball played in 18-degree weather at the World Series.
Right.
I don't need to see that. And then I don't need to see baseball up against the NFL for 2 full months.
That's true, too. That's true, too. But wasn't it 144 before?
There
went to 162?
It was 154.
It was at 154. Yeah. I think it got to 144 maybe in a strike-shortened year, maybe.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I just, as you know, a stat geek, I would have a problem with him getting away from that.
That's
the only sport where I'd really think about that. But I think that's just Rizzo speaking for everybody that's playing baseball right now. They're just sick and tired of playing in unplayable conditions. Or playing one day and then not playing again until 3 days later because it's snowing at their ballpark.
It's the 162 that's a grind. That's for damn sure. What's going on? By the way, Ohtani tonight, is it because you're the big baseball geek? If there's a big matchup in the NBA, I'm like, I don't care who's playing, or college basketball. If I have no allegiance to either team, I'm tuned in. Is this one of those games tonight?
I have zero allegiance to the Red Sox.
But you,
other than the fact that I have to talk about them.
Right.
But, and I have zero allegiance to the Angels. I will be watching this game
tonight. Okay, so if this is like the Marlins against Ohtani, you're like, I'm all in on this one. I want
to
see.
No, but this has regional interest to us.
I just hope as you want to see Ohtani.
I watched him against Oakland last weekend, that makes you feel better.
No, I mean, that's what I'm wondering when the Ohtani, what I'm saying is, I remember in L.A. when we had Fernando Valenzuela, when he was pitching.
Right, but he was on your team. He was on the team of the people in that area.
Yeah, but it was like national. I mean, people couldn't get enough of Fernando Mania local.
Yeah,
it was
Fernando Mania. It was out of control.
That was out of control. I'm just wondering when Ohtani's going to go.
And I think this is all going to continue to happen, and I guarantee you they're going to get huge numbers for that broadcast tonight on the regional networks. I mean, you come home from trivia, and there it is, ready to go. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm hoping tonight is the night that this bubble bursts, because how does a guy suddenly go from absolutely awful to dominating, both pitching and hitting, at the snap of a finger, yeah. sort of spring training ended.
I mean, two starts for Ohtani. He's allowed 3 runs on 4 hits. He's struck out 18 of the 45 batters that he has faced. He has been truly dominant. He does it with 3 pitches. He's got a fastball that is averaging 97 miles an hour, which is the third fastest fastball in baseball right now. It's behind Noah Syndergaard and Luis Severino as far as starters. Then you throw in a splitter that's 88 miles an hour that's dominant, and a slider that's 82 miles an hour. He's throwing a curveball at like 75. So he's got 3 main pitches, but he's got a curveball that's 23 miles an hour slower than his fastball.
I guess I probably should have asked you, look this up before. I don't think you'll know it off the top of your head. How much was he dominating over in Japan? Like, what was his, I don't know, like, was he
played very well, except he was injured a lot of last season.
Yeah.
Okay. With a leg injury, with an ankle injury.
By the way, I read that article about how the Red Sox almost signed Ohtani 5 years ago. Oh, could you imagine? I mean, how about that? That's crazy.
We'll see. I mean, like I said, I hope this all ends tonight, at least for one night. I think it's great for baseball to have this kind of thing going on. I just hope he doesn't continue it tonight. The Sox are a very patient team. They walk a lot. The games last forever, and a lot of it is because they'll wait.
Yeah, but that's not so much the case this year.
Yeah. I understand they've been swinging away, but I think they're willing to be patient if the circumstances call for it. And I think, I mean, you were talking about that dominating split finger, that slider he's got. All that stuff is in the dirt, and they're swinging at it. If you just can figure out a way to be patient and let that thing work its magic, it's going to be out of the strike zone.
Well, see, I think I look at it the other way. I think this is the perfect implementation of Alex Cora's offensive approach. Ohtani is a guy who pounds the strike zone. He's thrown 67% of the time first pitch strikes. That's more than two out of every 3 batters are getting a first pitch strike. For a guy in Cora whose offensive philosophy is hit fastballs and hit them early in the count, and for a guy who's throwing fastballs over early in the count, this is the perfect opportunity, I think, for the Sox to swing and swing early. Now, the counter to that for Ohtani is if you're going to swing at my fastball early, well, then I'm going to start throwing you junk early.
Right, right.
And then maybe you readjust. But if I'm the Red Sox, I'm going in saying I'm going for fastballs. I'm going for them early and often.
The other good news is most likely the Red Sox won't have to deal with his bat for 2 of the 3 games in this series, which is kind of a secondary thought. But he did.
Well, he said he wants to play more.
He doesn't generally hit the day after he pitches. So we may not see that 370 batting average with double-digit RBI until Thursday.
You know, I brought up the Ohtani mania to Fernando because I'm curious to see how many people are going to come out on a Tuesday out to Anaheim to see the game. Because if Ohtani pitched,
it'll be packed tonight.
I don't think it's going to be sold out.
There will be a lot of Red Sox fans there also because the Red Sox travel everywhere.
I just don't like if Ohtani was on the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Dodgers, anytime he'd be pitching, there'd be hype. There'd be sellouts. There'd be everything. It'd be send everybody out there. I'm
so sick of elitist baseball franchise fan saying that Ohtani or anybody else is nothing if it's not a Red Sox or a Yankees player. I've seen other people say, oh, what a great story Ohtani is. Oh, how much better would it be if we were in Boston? He's a great player.
He is a great player. But you know that, Brady. People like to see those type of players on the big name team.
Do I need Giannis Antetokounmpo on the Knicks to feel like he's special? No, I don't.
But don't think he won't at the first crack when he has a chance to leave to a big team.
That's not true either.
Actually, they were just talking about that last night.
With the way the NBA especially is, but this is the NBA specifically, with the growth of social media that those players have, with shoe deals being the big thing there, not so much television relevancy. Look, I understand that now it's the flavor of the week team, but Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in Golden State, they're not playing for the Lakers.
Right.
And Steph Curry is willing to be there for a long time. Durant left to go to that team also. Cleveland is no glamour city. I understand LeBron makes it that way.
Right.
Westbrook stayed in Oklahoma City and signed there long term. The Lakers, the Sixers, the Celtics, those teams are not, their history and their big city value is not going to carry them like it used to.
I just thought it would be better for baseball. You know, when you have, you know, like when Stanton went to the Yankees, right? I mean, isn't that better or is that worse? Or does that make a difference?
I mean, is that filling more seats at Yankee Stadium? Right now it doesn't matter because it's 20 degrees there every night. But they will eventually fill it, and he will eventually pound the you-know-what out of the baseball. You know that's coming. But, I mean, you look at it right now, I think it is good for baseball to have Stanton in New York. Absolutely. As opposed to Florida. Yeah. Because whether he's there or not, they're still only drawing 10,000 people when he was playing there.
You know, it's so funny because you said that Trout is the best hitter you ever seen. I heard Colin say, I would pay any money to see Trout. I'll pay to see Ohtani, yeah. but I'm not paying to see Trout. I'm like, wow, look how quickly we're turning on him so fast, huh?
That's because Colin hates baseball.
Best part of that is they play for the same team, so you get to see him anyway.
Yeah. I wish, you know, I talked to you guys before the season started. I said, let's all go out to do the show from Los Angeles and go see the Red Sox Angels. Can you imagine? We'd have Ohtani pitching today.
I think that'd be an excellent idea.
Yeah, too little too late.
I hate to leave this weather, but let's go.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see what Ohtani does tonight. I'm curious to see how many people are going to be able to stay up and do it, especially after trivia.
If he comes out and goes six innings and allows one run,
yeah.
what's your tone going to be tomorrow?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
If he comes out and goes four innings and gives up four runs, are you going to say he's a bust? Like, does it matter to you what he has? Has he already justified his spot in Major League Baseball to you, regardless of today?
Yes, he's justified the spot, but that it's not the ERA, it's not the hits he's given up that caught my attention. It's the strikeouts. And I know you're not supposed to do that, but his strike, I didn't even see that coming. I mean, what he's doing with the strikeouts is, I'm like, wow, he's really fooling the hitters. Now, will they catch up to him in
exactly.
time?
Exactly.
But
talk to me in 2 months.
If they were putting the ball in play, Brady, and guys, I would say, okay, they're going to catch up to him. But they're swinging and missing. They're not even close to
that's because this is the first time they've seen that slider. It's the first time they've seen him. I mean, I just always have been a big believer, especially in baseball, that familiarity with a pitcher makes a difference. And you're a former pitcher. You can tell me.
It does, but let's also understand, this guy is throwing 100 miles an hour with great secondary stuff. How many guys have seen Max Scherzer 25 times and can't hit him? How many guys have seen Steven Strasburg or Noah Syndergaard 25 times and can't hit him? Look, all the video in the world is out on Noah Syndergaard. He struck out 8 consecutive guys the other day in his last start. All the video in the world is out on him. People have seen him through the minors. People have seen him through his first few seasons in the pros. And he's still dominating, so I think Ohtani deserves some credit that he's got great stuff in general.
I think he deserves it right now. I just talked to me in 2 months about how this guy is doing. I mean, he's not going to hit 370, obviously, but, I mean, is he that good of a pitcher?
Well, and how much video is out on Chris Sale, right? The word is out on Sale, and he's still good. I think there's more than just unfamiliarity with why Ohtani is good. Yes, are people going to adjust to him, and he's going to have to readjust, and that's going to be the mark of how truly great he is? Yes. But his stuff is naturally
good. You said he was 97-mile-an-hour fastball.
His average velocity.
Okay. Does that mean he's like Nolan Ryan? Is that what we're looking at here? Because, you know, Nolan Ryan, a lot of strikeouts there, my friend, and there was plenty of tape on him. I don't know how fast he threw the ball.
Nolan Ryan was throwing 100 miles an hour before anyone else was. I mean, you know, back then, there was nobody throwing the ball as hard as him.
Yeah, but who knows if that's really true. Those guns, how accurate were those guns back then anyway? I think we were just making that stuff up.
No, but I remember as a little kid, I used to purposely stay up, and whenever they'd have him on the Monday night baseball game of the week or Sunday or whatever, if it was Nolan Ryan, you'd watch him because you heard there was a guy who actually threw 100 miles an hour. That seemed crazy at the time. Now it's, you know, it's dime a dozen.
I'm excited to see what he's going to do against the Red Sox. I want to see what kind of numbers he's going to put up. And I'm kind of curious to see if he was pitching or in the National League, how he would be hitting while he was pitching. You know what I'm saying? You know, if they would, where would they bat him? Brady, where would they bat him?
Good question.
In the National League if he was pitching? Like, I guess as a real hitter, that not like eighth or something, they would.
Yes, they would have to bat him as a real hitter, but then
you don't put him clean up.
No, because then when you take him out,
that's true too.
Oh yeah,
what the hell are you going to do?
Yeah,
well, an interesting thought.
Or you can't keep him in the game hitting unless you move him into the field.
You move him into the field.
All right, wow.
In college, you can have you could have him be the DH for himself. You could actually do that. The Angels, if they wanted to, could put him in the lineup and list him as the DH pitcher. And he could hit for himself, and then when he leaves the game as a pitcher,
he could say
he would be the DH.
How fun would that be?
They choose
starting pitcher batting fourth.
They choose not to do that, but they could. He could be the DH for himself.
Wow. I know there was one thing they couldn't do. I don't know the scenario, but there was one thing they couldn't do on that, but that's crazy. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Tom Caron. Let's talk more.
Tom Caron, TC, next right here at 101.3 ESPN.
Golic and Wingo when you drive in. Home, and you can always be part of the show by calling or texting at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. Guys, right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest sign. Joining us now, he does every week. He's our Red Sox and Bruin insider at SNN. It's Tom Caron. How you doing, TC?
Good. How are you doing, boys?
Good, my friend. Any special buzz for the game tonight with Ohtani on the mound? You all pumped up for that one or what?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this guy's been the story of Major League Baseball. I was pretty excited on Sunday when they got postponed in Kansas City, and that meant he'd be going against the Red Sox tonight. Listen, he's been dominant in two starts, but that's been against the Oakland A's. So let's see what he does against a better lineup tonight.
So you must be really bummed you don't get to spend a couple of hours on Yawkey Way and sleep.
I've been there and done that, and, you know, we're good on the freezing my tail off.
Yeah.
It's been just ridiculous. I mean, across, you know, and it's across the eastern half and through the Midwest of the country. I mean, I think it's been 27 games have been postponed across Major League Baseball already in 2.5 weeks. There was one year. That's more than were postponed in 2016, the entire season.
Wow.
So it's been incredible. How the weather has impacted this. I mean, you heard Chris Sale the other day after getting a win says, that is the most miserable I have ever been on a baseball diamond in my life, and it's not even close. So, welcome to New England, boys.
TC, you may not have to be at the weather, but doesn't that mean you're up until like 4 in the morning today doing post-game coverage because the game's out west?
It's true.
Yeah, luckily we do a shortened version of the post-game when they're out west because it's so late, but I got to hang there. Yeah, it'll be... We're hoping for a quick one here for the next few nights. Those are quick baseball games. I need to get home and get some sleep.
DC, on Ohtani, one more thing. Read the story today from Rod Bradford, WEEI, about how the Sox were all in on trying to sign him back when he was in high school. That was something I wasn't completely aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all over. In fact, I talked to Dave Dombrowski about it last week, and he was saying that they absolutely believed he could be a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. Eddie Romero, even before Dombrowski was here, was in on chasing after him. And he ultimately wanted to go to the West Coast. He thought that was a better place for him to be. I'm sure after looking at the weather, he's feeling pretty good about that decision. The interesting thing is, that at least on the Dombrowski side of things, he's way ahead of what they expect him to be as a hitter. They said, you know, Dave was telling me that they thought he could hit at the major league level, but they didn't think he'd have that kind of power and that kind of impact right away. They thought he could pitch, that the velocity and the split finger fastball plays, but they're surprised by how quickly he's adjusted to major league pitching as a hitter.
All right, what do the Red Sox do to break it open tonight? How do they get to him? And any truth that maybe Big Poppy wants to be activated so he can take a few swings against this guy?
Yeah, well, he's funny. He tweeted, see how they do against my boys tonight. The key is, and nobody, you know, again, just two starts, but no one's been able to do it yet, is laying off that splitter. He pitches, even his four-seamer, his fastball, is down in the zone. So everything is down in the zone. And so you're watching him pump in these 99, 100-mile-an-hour fastballs low in the zone. And then he throws the splitter, which is the equal plane low in the zone, and then drops off the table, and you're swinging at nothing. And that's been the problem. And then just to keep you honest, he's got a slider that with the lateral movement, and he's actually thrown a few change-ups and two-seam fastballs. So he's thrown five different pitches already in two starts at the major league level. Just no gyro ball yet. You know, we're still looking for the infamous gyro ball. But yeah, if you can lay off the splitter, I think you've got a chance to do it, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah, how tough is it for Alex Cora to come out and say, all right, guys, I know I've told you to be really much more aggressive at the plate, swing at those first pitches if it's there, but maybe not tonight. I mean, how tough is that to just change that around?
It's interesting, though, because I forget who it was. The Oakland A hitter who hit the three-run homer off in the first one said the reason he hit a slider, and he said, we knew that hanging around in counts was actually going to let him set up that splitter, so we were trying to attack strikes early in the count. So you're right. On the one hand, I'm saying lay off the splitter. On the other hand, he tends to establish things with the fastball. So I think if you can chase after some strikes early in the count, you might not get to the point where he uses that splitter.
Tom Caron, Red Sox Bruin insider at Nesson, with us on the Huddle. Z is every week at this time on 101.3 ESPN. We were talking about this yesterday. I think there's probably two possible choices here. Biggest surprise for the Sox, Hanley Ramirez or Rick Porcello?
I'll go Hanley Ramirez over Porcello because Porcello, you know, listen, the guy still, it was 2 years ago he won the Cy Young. It wasn't 10 years ago. And, you know, last year, as bad as the win-loss record was and the ERA and the most hits and all of that, he was still unbeaten when the Red Sox scored more than 3 runs in a game, right? He was 11-0 last year when they scored more than 3 runs. So I really didn't think it would be that hard for Porcello to readjust. Now, again, I don't expect him to have a 1-point-something ERA all season. I expect that to level off. But I thought he would be good this year. I thought Hanley would be good this year, too, because I think there's a lot of motivation. But for him to be as impactful as he has been, and obviously the protection of J.D. Martinez behind him means a lot. He's seeing pitches to hit, and he's hitting them. And he said 30 homers and 30 stolen bases, and he's on pace for both. So there you go.
You talk about the guy behind him. How about the guy in front of Hanley? Andrew Benintendi started out horrendously. He's gotten hot here of late within the last week. What did he do to turn the corner?
Well, I think one thing that if you notice, even while he was starting horrendously a week into the season, 10 days into the season, he was leading the American League in walks. So the one thing that gave me a good indication that he was going to be okay is that he still had good plate discipline. He wasn't chasing after bad pitches. He wasn't a complete mess at the plate. You know, he still had an idea out there. So, you know, he was chasing some stuff outside the strike zone, and they were toying with him. But then as he started to lay off those pitches, they had to start throwing him strikes, and now he's making the most of them. So sometimes you look for little things like that. You know, how lost is the guy at the plate? He was struggling, but he wasn't really lost. His approach seemed to be pretty good.
How about Mookie Betts? 350-plus. I mean, unbelievable. I said sooner or later you're going to have to take him out of the leadoff spot if you want to get more runs. I don't know. They may have to do that.
Don't start that again. Do not start that again. They've done that so many times. The guy loves leading off.
Yeah, I know.
He hit, you know, he's an impact guy leading off. He gets on base 3-4 times a game. And Hanley and JD, now you got guys who can drive him in. Let him sit there. He's happy there. He's got great impact in the lineup leading off. And listen, I said this to you guys a few weeks back at spring training. Let's not forget, everybody talks about what a down year he had last year. He finished sixth in AL MVP voting, and that was a down year for Mookie Betts. So this is no surprise.
Speaking of him, a little crash landing there against the Orioles at home plate the other day. Is he going to play in tonight and in this series?
I haven't heard yet. They thought he would be able to play tonight, but honestly, I haven't heard anything yet because of the time difference. So yeah. I would expect him to be in the lineup tonight. At least that's what they thought. It was a bruise on the foot, contusion, as we like to say, because it sounds worse. But I think that they were really being cautious with him. It was whatever it was, 18 degrees below zero with the wind chill on Sunday, so there was really no reason to put him into a game like that.
How about Bogaerts? Is he coming along?
Yeah, they say the progress is good, and we'll see. You know, that's a crack. I mean, I know it's a hairline fracture. But when you start talking about a broken bone in the ankle, I'm getting a little concerned. That said, I was talking to him a few days ago, and he wasn't even wearing his boot in the clubhouse. He was just walking around in flip-flops, playing Fortnite with the rest of them. But he seemed to be healing quickly, so that's good news.
TC, how about Drew Pomeranz? He's going to pitch on Friday, it looks like. What can we expect out of him? How did he look down there in his rehab starts?
Well, I mean, if we only could get Tim Tebow on that Oakland roster, he'd be all set because he took care of him up in Portland, didn't he?
Yeah.
He, you know, the reports were good. I saw a video of him up in Portland. Seemed to have velocity. Seemed to have command. He walked six guys 2 starts ago in Pawtucket, that first rehab start, and he was actually the one who said, "I want to get another rehab start to get my act together here." So. I think that spoke well in the fact that he right away told Corey, yeah, I'm ready, let's go. You know, he was a godsend for them last year. Without those 17 wins, I don't know where they would have ended up. And so this guy now coming back, you're finally going to have the 5 starters you thought you might have. And it's, you know, Stephen Wright's still on the horizon at some point. So this pitching staff's going to get better.
TC, switching over to the Bruins, I mean, last night was weird in the sense that it's not like they laid an egg. I mean, you didn't come out of that game going, ugh, man, they handed that one. I mean, they did outshoot them 42-30. They just couldn't get it past Anderson.
Yeah, and they hit a couple posts, and there was the phantom delay of game call that Jack Edwards is still screaming about. it was a frustrating night. Listen, Anderson, I said it last night on Twitter. Anderson couldn't make it through 40 minutes on Saturday night. He made 40 saves last night.
Yeah.
Jekyll and Hyde goalies don't usually go deep in the playoffs, but he was good. You know, he he made some great saves. I think the Bruins have to feel pretty good about how they played and get another crack at them now tomorrow night.
What do you make of the Bruins special teams unit, TC? Because, I mean, five power play goals in the first two games. I certainly thought that that was the separator in those first two games. What have you thought of them on special teams as a whole?
Well, yeah, they've been phenomenal on special teams. But and I don't want to take anything away from the Bruins, but I think the Leafs have just been awful on the penalty kill. I think the Leafs have been pretty awful defensively across the board. I mean, they give up odd man rush after odd man rush, and they rely on Anderson to make 40 saves. I'm not impressed by them defensively. I really thought the Leafs would be a more formidable playoff team, but you got to play defense in the playoffs. And that said, back to the Bruins, you know, this team that, with all these young guys, you know, you got to have grit, you got to have physicality in the playoffs. They have all of that. But this might be one of the most skilled Bruins teams I've seen in a long, long time. These young guys have a really, really high skill level. And obviously you added Rick Nash to that, and you know what kind of skill he has. Pasternak is so skilled offensively. You know, DeBrusk has great skill. You're going to get Riley Nash back in there, who's a skilled guy. Donato's a skilled guy when Nash isn't in there. Their defenseman, McAvoy, can do a lot with his shot and his stick handling. Really, just, I mean, when they get those odd man rushes, you see them flying up the ice 2-on-1. And they're just moving it around. It's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters on ice. They're really fun to watch.
He's Tom Karen, TC. Always a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy the game tonight. Get that coffee going. You're gonna be up very late, my friend.
I'm walking in now to get the first of many. So
yes.
We're loading up.
Get the French vanilla creamer, all right? So
oh,
go.
Come on. Black coffee. That's hot black coffee. Man up, Arnie.
That is horrible.
I don't need French vanilla with a shot of hazelnut. Come on.
All right, TC.
Give me more caffeine. I don't need flavor. I need caffeine.
You need the caffeine. Okay? I love it. Have fun. We'll speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Oh, I love it. I can't drink it black. What are you kidding me, man? I got to have French vanilla creamer, and I take a few sips, and I
just don't drink coffee.
No, I was going to say my next sip of coffee will be my first one ever.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, I was never that big of a coffee drinker. Now I am.
Mountain Dew.
I'll swirl it down all I can, but good to hear from Tom Karen. Red Sox and Bruins in full swing, and, of course, Celtics. So,
man.
And all we need is a little Patriots news. How about that?
The hell of a week.
Gone but not forgotten as we finish off hour number one. That's coming up next right here at 101.3 ESPN.
It's Tuesday, which means it's time for Gone But Not Forgotten. Brought to you by Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington.
All right, time for Gone But Not Forgotten. Thanks to our friends at Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation in Burlington. A family's love is forever. Feel free to contact them 24/7 at Elmwood Meunier. Even they have affordable options for your pets. So go ahead and give them a call. They're open 24/7. The first death I want to get to, and I hope I'm saying his last name right. What is F. Lee Emery? Ermery? Did I get that?
I think it's Ermey.
Ermey? Did I?
Oh, is that? That's that crazy drill sergeant.
From Full Metal Jacket.
Yes.
Sorry, or Pio, eat the jelly. What is this, a jelly donut? Have you seen Full Metal Jacket?
No.
Oh,
this
my gosh,
guy,
what a movie.
Oh, did he play a drill sergeant in, like, other movies,
yes,
too?
That was, unfortunately, his... That was his only
He was typecast, and
yes,
he played it great, Brady. Oh. I mean, he was like a drill sergeant. I mean, he could be a drill sergeant. I thought he was a drill sergeant in real life. He played it so well.
The first 45 minutes of Full Metal Jacket are some of the greatest cinema you'll ever see.
When Vincent D'Onofrio played Private Pyle, right?
Yes. And the scene in the bathroom. Oh my gosh.
You were watching that before we got out of the air.
That is an unbelievable movie.
Now he shoots
the sergeant.
He shoots himself.
The gun in his mouth.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
It is. That's the one. Full Metal Jacket also has, what's that actor's name? The good looking tall guy that's athletic. What's his name?
Never heard of this movie.
Heard of the movie.
Matthew Bodine.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I'm a fan of his, yes. Matthew Bodine.
Yeah, Joker, I think.
Yes. I like him.
Yeah, no, but really.
Brady, you got to watch.
The 5 minutes of that movie is must see.
Oh, yeah. Okay. This was a movie. When did you say they made this?
I think it was 80.
This is like a 38, 40-year-old movie, and it still resonates today. Yeah. I'm telling you, there's people that are going to get us on the Town Fair Tire text line saying, best movie ever, best drill sergeant ever, best scene ever, you know, something like that. So
he was terrifying.
And Ben Franklin passed away on this day, one of our founding fathers. I should bring that up. Oh, were you going to use him?
No, it wasn't.
Oh,
it just,
84 years old.
It's an interesting transition.
You know, electricity, flying the
car. Yeah, that guy, isn't that a arts and crafts store or something?
Get a key.
Anyway, gone but not forgotten for me is Nick Mangold, one of the truly funny, interesting dudes in sports. And he announced he is retiring after 11 years with the Jets. He announced it this morning on Twitter. 34 years old, sat out last season after being released. Crazy big hair flying everywhere, huge beard, and a great sense of humor, and he will be missed.
Speaking of people without great senses of humor, apparently Brett Favre, gone but not forgotten, his chances at being on Monday Night Football. ESPN is having tryouts for Monday Night Football, and Favre, he's no longer a consideration because, plain and simple, he just wasn't very good.
There you go. Thanks, our friends. I'm Woodman Yeh, Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington. A family's love is forever, so feel free to contact them 24/7. Elmwood Beignet, even affordable options for your pets. Hour one of the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. We'll get you ready for hour two next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Rich, Arnie, and Brady are back, and they're already starting to argue.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. A real busy Tuesday. Remember, we got trivia tonight. Brady,
you're hosting. Trivia tonight, yes, that's right. Burger Bar in Colchester across from Fanny Allen. Can't wait to be there. Also, we're going to have tons of prizes, half-price appetizers, so those great wings. We're going to have every appetizer you could want is half price.
I
and
know.
The drink specials are there as well. $2.50 for the aluminums of the Miller Lite, $2.50 for Coors Light, $3 for Blue Moon. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Shane in Burlington says, completely agree with Rich. The first half of Full Metal Jacket is amazing. Second half just so.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to get
The battle started, the movie wasn't quite the same, but that first half was fun.
Brady, are we still looking for a qualifier for the mistake of the day?
Well, right now we've got people that have sent in mistakes of the day. So right now we got somebody who got a leader in the clubhouse.
Yes, we do.
We've still got another hour here to mess up.
All right. So if you get the if you find a mistake, just tweet it on in. So and we'll try to get the mistake of the day brought to you by our Embroidery Works at Joanne's Uniform in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. So we want to thank them for doing that. A lot to get to this week, a lot to do right now. Start with Des Bryant, because I know he said he wanted to join the Giants. I'm not so sure the Giants have a lot of interest in this guy, to be honest.
Well, remember, first off, tomorrow broadcasting live UPS store, North Avenue in Burlington. Today is tax day. We all hate that day. You've got all this documents that you need to get shredded. If you bring in 5 pounds or less of documents tomorrow, they'll shred it for you for free. So that's tomorrow, 4 till 7. As for Des Bryant, you're right. Des says that he would have no problem joining the Giants. He would love to play the Cowboys twice a year to get some revenge on them. He'd love to play alongside Odell Beckham Jr. and Eli Manning. But as of now, it does look like, and I believe correctly, the Giants don't have interest in Des.
I think he's sounding desperate when he does stuff like that. I know he wants to pick his own team, but you don't get to pick your own team.
Especially if you're going to charge so much for your services.
It's more than just, is he a good wide receiver? Is he serviceable? It's how many do you have? Can you make room for him? How much money is he going to ask for? How many years is this going to be? You know, obviously all that plays into a factor. Is he going to disrupt the clubhouse or the locker room or whatever you want to call it? I'm not so sure. You know, there's as many teams as he's making it out to be to go after. But with that being said, it wouldn't be that bad of a fit with the Giants.
But how crazy would life be in that locker room with Des Bryant and OBJ in an enclosed space together?
I don't know what Des Bryant would take. He says it's not going to be about money. If it's 1 year and it's affordable, I would go for Des Bryant 100%. And I'm with you long term. I think Odell Beckham Jr. and Des Bryant together would be volatile. But 1 year, as of right now, Odell Beckham Jr. has 1 year left on his deal. If he's going to be there, I trust he's on his best behavior this year so he can get the contract he wants in the offseason. If Des Bryant's willing to sign a 1 year deal and just wants to stick it to the Cowboys and it's not about money, I trust I'm going to get him on his best behavior. Now, it's not a massive need for the Giants. They have Odell Beckham Jr., they have Sterling Shepard, and they have Evan Ingram at tight end. They don't need to just go after wide receivers. If they release Brandon Marshall, that opens up one spot, but if they kept Marshall, then they really don't have a need. But I trust I'll get them at their best behavior, both of them, for one season.
And it's going to be at an NFC East discount in his case. I mean, I would, if I'm the Redskins or the Eagles, and if there's any interest at all, I think you could get Dez Bryant for a very big-time discount.
I mean, I could get him for 1 year and $3 million?
No.
All he wants to do is play Dallas twice, and there's only three teams that can make that happen.
I don't think you're going to get him for less than $8 to $10 million a year.
Well, then then he's pricing himself out of his...
Not really.
I mean, if he's going to control the situation, he needs to allow for some financial...
Well, that is. I mean, he was making 16. And matter of fact, if you look at some of the other wide receivers, as you mentioned before, Brady, Sammy Watkins. I mean, those guys are making a boatload of money. And some Jarvis Landry, did you see what the Browns are paying him? And Dez maybe is equal or maybe even a little bit less. But that's like $8 to $10 million a year, not $3 million or anything.
I'm
like
not saying that Dez Bryant would play for that. But I'm telling you that if it's truly not about money and it's truly out of revenge and spite, then I'm going to kick the tires on at least asking him what he wants. If he starts telling me he wants 3 years and $37 million, then enjoy your career somewhere else. Someone will pay you that much money. It just won't be me as the New York Giants. If he's saying, look, for 1 year, I'll take $5 million or less just to stick it to the Cowboys, then I would kick the tires on that, yes.
Is he still a guy that's going to help you get to the Super Bowl, though? Is this still a guy? What's he going to give you? I think he's going to give you numbers like Cooks. A little bit over 1,000 yards, maybe 60-plus catches. Is that
only 17 players had 1,000 yards receiving last year.
Really? Maybe 800 then. Maybe I give him too much credit there.
I don't see Dez Bryant getting 1,000 yards in that offense with OBJ on the other side of the line. I just on the other side of the field. I just don't know how that happens. But, look, if he's going to take a $5 million pay cut to stick it to the, you know, to stay in the NFC East, then more power to any one of those teams, especially the Giants.
Town Fair Tire text on if you want to get in, 802-655-6672. But we're still getting a lot on the drill sergeant. I want you to know that. And somebody said that I had made a mistake when I said that he was one of the best drill sergeants in all of movies. They said, what about Clint Eastwood? So I may have to stand corrected on that one also.
Sorry for my stupidity, but when was Clint Eastwood a drill sergeant? What was that movie? I just didn't see it.
I have so many. I forget which one it was, but he was a real... I forget the movie... But he was a really, really good... I can't believe I can't remember the movie, and it was... I'm getting so many texts right now. Someone help me out on that one on the Town Fair Tire text line. He played a drill sergeant, and he was phenomenal also. So I'll give him some credit on that.
Heartbreak Ridge.
Heartbreak Ridge, that's it. Damn.
I mean, he could have been brilliant in Cinderella. Let's face it.
Look, so I just think for Dez and for the Giants, and I don't think Dez is a guy who's going to get 1,000 yards, but if you have a healthy Odell Beckham Jr. and he can play a combination of the slot and play outside, and you get Sterling Shepard who can play a combination of the slot and outside, and if you can start to transition Dez Bryant to the next phase of his career and get him a combination of the slot and outside, the Giants played more three wide receiver sets in 2016 than any other team in the league. Now, they made the playoffs that year, but they like three wide receiver sets. And it remains to be seen what Mike Shula does as the new offensive coordinator and what Pat Shurmur does as the new head coach, but it's been their MO to play three wide receiver sets. If I can get OBJ, Sterling Shepard, and Dez Bryant, and I can get him at a cut rate, I would be interested in that.
You know what's interesting? I love the... Okay, you got those three wide receivers. You're going to try to... You've tried to do something at running back when they signed...
Jonathan Stewart.
And I'm assuming they're going to go ahead and try to bolster up the offensive line. Obviously, they got Solder and whatever they got to do. Boy, wouldn't that be a great time for a rookie quarterback to come in with those three wide receivers? How would you? I mean, do you want to drudge Eli Manning through another year or two of mediocrity, or do you? Or would a rookie quarterback love to come in with those three wide receivers, a revamped offensive line, and a brand new start? That might not be too bad there, Brady.
I'm not. Go ahead.
For 1 year, see. For 1 year, again, I'm okay with this setup. I do not think long term having a young, inexperienced quarterback playing with the volatile personalities and ball-demanding guys that are Odell Beckham Jr. and Dez Bryant, I don't think that works. For 1 year, I think that they're going to be on their best behavior because they both want, in one case, want to reestablish value in Dez Bryant and stick it to the Cowboys. In one case, pump up his own salary demands in Odell Beckham Jr. I think this year those guys are okay working together, and I think they'd be okay working with Eli Manning, because I think no matter who the Giants draft, it's Eli Manning for this season, absolutely, no matter what. So I think for this year, I'm good with it. Long term, if Dez Bryant says I want 3 years to come to the Giants, then I'm passing on that. But 1 year, $5 million or less, which I don't know that he would take, but that's what I would ask.
Yeah, that's the thing, Arnie. You're talking about bringing in a even if it's the number two pick, whomever it happens to be, Rosen or whoever it ends up being. We've had this discussion. He's not. I don't think you can bring a guy in like Dez Bryant for 1 year and have a Josh Rosen throwing to
him.
Why
not?
I mean, Eli Manning isn't done.
No,
I'm not,
you're right about that. Eli,
you say mediocrity. How mediocre is he going to be if he stays healthy and he's got those three guys to throw to? Not even including Ingram.
They were ready to make the move last year when they benched him. That wasn't because they were mad at him the last three games.
That was McAdoo.
That was to get rid of him permanently.
I think that I think it's partly both. I do think Eli Manning is on the back nine of his career.
Sure.
I don't think he has a fastball at this point. He has zero mobility. That said, if you put a better offensive line around him, a better head coach who works with quarterbacks better than Ben McAdoo did, offensive weapons that are healthy. Let's understand and remember Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham Jr. missed most of the season last year. So you took a guy who was on the back nine, and you took away all of his resources, essentially. If he gets those resources back and gets a fortified offensive line, I do think this team can only go up. Do I think the Giants are winning more than 8 games next year? Maybe not, but I don't think they're winning 3.
You can see somebody's worth when they become a free agent. There'll be teams after Dez, depending on what the money is. If we said who would want Eli Manning right now, I don't know if there's a lot of teams, and that quarterbacks are a high desire there. I don't know if there's a lot of teams, maybe in Arizona or something, that would want Eli Manning as their quarterback.
But the whole Dez thing's going to be fun, because I mean, there's a couple of Baltimore Ravens that have called him and talked to him and tried to get him to come. But if he goes to the AFC, it may be a little bit more about money than if he goes to the NFC East, where he's willing to play for just about anything to get at his Cowboys twice.
I don't know if he has money problems, but when he first got into the NFL, do you know he was sued by a local jeweler in Dallas when I was down there, because he never paid his bill on his jewelry. He just took the jewelry and just never paid the guy. Where I come from, when you take stuff and you don't pay for it, that's actually called stealing. I don't know where you come from, guys, but when you take stuff and you don't pay for it, that's called stealing. He obviously was loaned the jewelry, never paid for it, and he was making a stink about it. It was a lot of money with the jewelry, and he didn't pay for that for a long time. They almost went to court over that. So I'm thinking maybe he had some financial troubles or something when he first came into the league. I'm wondering if he had a good financial advisor with all the money, because otherwise his money's still important to him.
Do you need a financial advisor to, say, pay them when you buy something?
No, but it just goes to show you, you know, that
someone else will buy it. I'm a football star.
It just goes to show you, you know, the whole attitude when he first came in.
It looks like he has made $56 million in his career.
$56 million, I bet you if you cut that in half is what he'll actually take on home. And who knows, man? Who knows if he had any bad investments or anything like that? I don't know. He said he would never take a pay cut when they asked him a couple of months ago. Obviously, his tune has changed.
Well, he said he would have taken a pay cut to stay in Dallas.
Yes, but he wasn't offered that. I'm getting ripped on the Top Fair Tire text line. It says, mistake, Arnie. Ermy played a drill sergeant. He was actually a gunnery sergeant. And they're telling me, no, there, a bunch of people sent that in, said that I would be destroyed if I would be insulting them if I called them a drill sergeant.
Alex Trebek would give you a no to that. that's correct.
Alex Trebek would give you a no. What's going on? Yankees getting ready. What's up with Jeter? What's going on with that?
Well, Yankees crushed the Marlins yesterday, 12-1. Derek Jeter reportedly was in New York City but did not go to Yankee Stadium. And for whatever the reason is, he didn't want to bring a bad team to Yankee Stadium and show his face. He didn't want to take away from his team in the Marlins. He didn't want to disrespect the Yankees by going in there as a member of another organization. Whatever it is, I think Derek Jeter should have been there yesterday. I think he made a mistake.
I think he should have been there, not because of the Yankees. You know, it's just amazing. There was a big crowd out there, was there not, to go ahead and kind of see him a little bit or no? Not really.
In that weather. I saw a lot of empty chairs at the stadium last night.
It was, 32,000, it says here. So. I feel like he snubbed them. I feel like it's a snub because he's gone out of his way now to not go to that game.
What did he say? He said he was uncomfortable. I mean, it's not like he avoided the issue. He went out and actually said he was not comfortable being there.
He said that it would be an awkward situation.
Yeah.
For any of the reasons that I just said. I don't know. One, he doesn't want to answer Stanton questions anymore. Two, he doesn't want to go to Yankee Stadium as a member of another organization. Three, he doesn't want to take away from his current organization. Or four, he's embarrassed by his team's on-field product and doesn't want to go to Yankee Stadium without a winner. Yeah, well, I think those are the four reasons, all of which I think are weak.
And not to mention it was backed up by that particular Marlins team who lost by 11 runs last night in the Bronx. But I think it's number two. Now I have to remember what all four of those were. But whatever you said was number two is the correct answer.
Number two. There you go. I'll say number three. I don't know
I
what that was.
I just remember when he went through the four thinking, all right, remember what number two was.
Brady, I think he's embarrassed. I think he's embarrassed about the whole situation, and I don't think he felt also that he was going to feel love on that day. Am I wrong about that? Were the fans going to show him some love, or they weren't going to
show him some love? They were going to show him some love. They showed Don Mattingly some love. They put him at the end of the roll call. Remember where they have the players, you know, Derek Jeter, boom, 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 and they tipped their hat? They did that for Don Mattingly, who's the manager of the Marlins. I think it's weak what he did. If he didn't want to answer Stanton questions anymore and he didn't want to make this about him and Stanton, he left his team out there to dry and he left his manager out there, also a former Yankee who couldn't avoid the situation in Don Mattingly. He left him to continue to answer Giancarlo Stanton questions when that question should go to members of the front office. I think it was a poor management decision for him to not be there.
That was number two, by the way.
Tim in South Burlington said he didn't show up for the Yankee game because it would have been disrespectful to his own team to show up in a Yankee uniform. Hashtag still, he's still a Yankee. So
he probably could play for the Marlins right now. What are they, 4-12?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I'd love to see that. When's the last time we've had a player manager? I think it has to go back to maybe Dave Cowens in the NBA. Yeah, Pete Rose or Dave Cowens in the NBA when he was manager and played for the Boston Celtics.
Bill Russell.
You know, you can't do that anymore, by the way. At least in the NBA, you can't be a player manager.
Magic, wasn't he, for a year?
Oh, yeah. Maybe at the end of a year. I don't think it was for a full year. But yeah, those days are long gone. We've done a lot more of those before, no doubt about that. Brady, what's coming up on Champlain Valley game night tonight?
Well, we're going to talk with Scott Mindell. Scott Mindell finished 30th yesterday on the men's side of the Boston Marathon. Nice. So he finished the Boston Marathon, finished 30th, so he's very, very accomplished runner. Just how bad were those conditions? He'll join us at 6:20.
Oh, my God.
26 miles of that crap.
Are you reading the Town Fair Tire text line, Rich? Have you seen what's coming in on the whole drill sergeant thing?
Yeah, well, we...
It's more now coming in.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
It's important. We got our important titles wrong.
Well, no, even more than that, Keith Annette says he wants to clarify two things. Heartbreak Ridge. Clint was a platoon sergeant for a recon Marine platoon, not drill instructor. And Ermey was a Marine Corps drill instructor. I think I got cut off there, so I don't know. But, boy, people really know the difference between drill instructors and all that stuff. Brady, what's coming up next?
Kevin Mensch is going to stop by. Former Major League outfielder. He played with the Rangers, the Blue Jays, the Brewers, the Nationals. He once homered in 7 consecutive games.
Ah!
He's going to join us.
Kevin Mensch next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Arnie injured himself playing basketball. Ouch! Again. How is it that he never sprains his mouth? This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's go!
Welcome back here in The Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is the story of the day, and make no mistake, this is unusual that we're talking about a baseball game, a singular game, being the story of the day in April. But it's Shohei Ohtani against the Red Sox for the first time. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves an 8-year Major League veteran, power-hitting outfielder, played with the Rangers, then with the Brewers, the Blue Jays, and the Nationals. It's Kevin Mensch. Kevin, thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Appreciate you joining us. We're well as well. And we mentioned the Major League teams that you played for. You also did a stint playing in Japan back in 2009. You faced Japanese pitchers here in the States as well. When we talk about Ohtani today, what is the challenge for Major League hitters hitting a Japanese pitcher? Because there are some.
Well, first of all, there's not a lot of video on him. You know how fast things move nowadays with social media and everything else. You know, they have scouting reports instantaneous. So, I mean, for the league to, you have to give him a year. Let guys see him throughout the league and make the adjustment. And that's the biggest problem I think a lot of these Japanese pitchers have had, is they'll dominate the first year and then, you know, they seem to be middle of the pack for the majority of them after that, because the league is caught up to them. And if they can learn to make the adjustments, you know, as the game evolves and people see them, then it becomes a little bit better for them. But right now, I mean, nobody has seen this guy before. I mean, he throws hard. I think I watched his first start. I mean, he was throwing, 96, 99 consistently. So, I mean, he's got the velocity, but it's just – but nowadays everybody throws that hard, right?
Yeah.
So it's just – these guys just need to see him and then go from there. So if you face him – so if you're a Boston, you face him once a year maybe. So, you know – so the guys don't get a chance to see him. But, you know, guys in the division and in the AL West, they start to see him and go through it. It'll be interesting to see him. Not so much this year, but it'll be next year.
You know, one of the things we're going to see tonight is his splitter. And the splitter is something that Japanese pitchers predominantly do feature. And I have to assume whether it was when you were in Texas playing against Seattle and Sasaki or Shigetoshi Hasegawa, I have to assume you've seen really good splitters in your career. What's the challenge in hitting that pitch?
You never know what it could do. It could just be flat and not move, or all of a sudden the bottom could fall out of it. And that seems to be their staple. The fastball, in Japan though, the umpires usually give a lot more pitches inside off of the plate than they do away. So I think that'll be an adjustment for him here, but those splitters are just, I mean, if it's a good one, I mean, you really don't have a shot, especially if a guy's throwing 98 miles an hour. I mean, you really don't have a chance. Unless you can see it coming out of his hand, or if it just stays flat.
How would you feel about playing with a guy who wanted to play both ways? Ohtani obviously has had success so far as a pitcher and as a hitter. How would you feel in that clubhouse about a guy doing both? Because it's not something we see very often here in the States.
I mean, I guess, like you said, I'm not sure how I would feel. You know, I would want somebody, if he's, you know, especially if he's swinging the bat the way he is. But like I said, give him a year, let the league adjust and see how it is, and then go from there. But you don't see it. You know, you see kids not even in college anymore that can really do both. They either pick one or do the other. So, I mean, I guess the downside could be, I don't know what his, you know, from if he's pitching on he's pitching every fifth day, I don't know what his schedule is hitting wise, if he's allowed to even play in the field. I don't know. Has he been in the field at all?
He has not been in the field yet. He usually pitches, then takes that day off hitting, doesn't hit the next day, and then hits the third day. So he probably plays 2 to 3 games a week as a hitter.
Why waste it if you're going to get, what do you think? He's going to have maybe 300 at bats,
yeah,
maybe in a year, if that. So, I mean, so do you really want him to do that, or do you just have him focus on pitching? So, I don't know. I mean, it all depends. You know, his arm's not going to stay throwing that hard. So, I mean, does he work on his outfield a little bit? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's the dilemma that they have to what do we keep him focused on? Because you can't, you know, I got to go hit in the cage, I got to go throw a bullpen, I got to do this, I got to do that. So who knows? Who knows what his day consists of?
Kevin Mensch, 8-year big league player, outfielder, power hitting outfielder, once homered in 7 straight games. He's here with us on the huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, we focused last week on the Red Sox and Yankees and the melee that they had all over a semi cleats up spike. How big of ascriber to the unwritten rules were you in your playing days?
You kind of abide by them, like you said. It's unwritten, but you know there are people now that take advantage of certain things. There's some things you do and there's some things you don't do. You know, I know they changed a lot of the rules because of Chase Utley on the slide to second. That's kind of stuff that doesn't belong. But at the same time, you can't take out breaking up a double play. There's a right way and a wrong way to do it. I think for Joy, right? Didn't he have something happen with his knee?
Yeah,
a while
last
back
year.
With the same. So that's, I mean, there's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. Kind of like the play with Buster Posey at home. If that's not Buster Posey, we're not hearing about it. But because it's Buster Posey, now we have to change the rule because one of the faces of baseball got hurt.
Now,
but understand, if you do it the right way, yes, you can keep it in there. But once again, one bad apple, now it ruins it for everybody.
Kevin, we heard some of the Red Sox players say after that brawl that they weren't going in there too quick because Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge are guys they didn't want to throw down with. Now, I imagine you would be somebody I would not want to see in a brawl. Did you ever get any good brouhahas in your day?
I was never involved directly where it was me, but it was funny. I was talking to somebody the other day about the fight that Nigel Morgan had in Miami.
Yes.
In 2010, and you know, you get into those piles, and you never know. You know, I got on the backside of it. I forget who was catching at the time. Whoever, I had a hold of his chest protector, and he had his mask on. But I grabbed him. He turned and looked at me, and I told him, I said, "If you go in that pile, I'm going with you." But then out of the corner of my eye, I see Miami's bullpen coming, and I make eye contact with Jorge Sosa at the time just to make sure, you know, hey, I know you're coming. But because you never know, so you could get suckered in a heartbeat. So you just make sure that the guys know what's going on. And then it's just more like just trying to grab people off the pile. But like I said, there are those guys that will come in here and just sucker you out of the middle of nowhere.
Kevin Menchie's with us, 8-year Major League Baseball player, power-hitting outfielder on the huddle on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. One of the other big stories of this Red Sox season has been their new manager. They're 13-2 under Alex Cora. And the reason why he was hired was apparently because he was going to be a better communicator with the players and more relatable to the players than John Farrell. And John Farrell, an old-school guy, even though he won back-to-back division titles, he was let go. What kind of manager did you like playing for? Do we make too much of this guy who's a, quote, player's manager?
No, because it's – I mean, Alex has always been a very, very vocal guy. He will talk to you. And, you know, he's in this generation now of, you know, that of – like I said, now it's more of the social media, all about me type of stuff. And I think Alex is on that cusp of being able to differentiate between the guys, the older guys and the younger guys that are there. So I think it just really depends. But I think the one thing you do want out of a manager is a manager that played at that level, that understands what a guy goes through on a daily basis. You come in, the night before, it says, hey, you're going to have the day off. Just do what you need to do and then come back in 2 days ready to go. That's the kind of stuff you want to hear. And I think Alex is probably that guy who does that. He had success at this level. And, he brings the right guys in to say, hey, I need you to do this today and you're going to get the day off tomorrow. Not coming in and not knowing, am I playing today? Am I not playing today? You like to know beforehand. It gives you, like I said, a chance just to mentally prepare because it's a grind. 62 games in 108 days is a lot to take in. So when you have somebody that's looking out for your best interest as well as the team, that's what guys buy into. And I think that's what guys are buying into up there in Boston.
Kevin, whether we talk about Chris Sale as a starter or Craig Kimbrell as a reliever, the Red Sox have two of the best pitchers in baseball. Was there a pitcher that just wore you out or you went to the plate and you're like, man, I can't believe I got to face this guy today?
It's funny. That's another discussion we've had before. I when Tim Hudson was in Oakland, he would throw between 96, 92, and 98, and it would move 3-4 feet, and I just couldn't sniff him. I just never had a chance. He goes to the National League, and I start to have a little bit of success against him. But he was one guy I never wanted to see just because I really just, it didn't matter. I think sometimes the umpires didn't help back then when I was a rookie. But he was – even when his ball was moving, it was nasty. So, there's always guys. And then there's on the flip side, there's guys you have success against. Ryan Franklin, I had great success against him. And then he goes to the National League, and I couldn't sniff him. So
that's because I'm a Mariners fan. Everybody hits the Mariners. That's what I've learned. So Ryan Franklin was a Mariner, so no wonder you had success. other players, speaking of guys who had success against the Mariners, how about your former teammate in Texas, A-Rod? What was it like playing with A-Rod? Because we've heard a lot of stories, and he's kind of repaired his image now, but what was it like playing with him?
Alex looked out for me when I was here. He took me under his wing, and I've always gravitated towards older guys, having – my brothers are 10 and 14 years older than I am. So I always kind of looked up to those guys and wanted to be around them. And he took me under his wing. If I did something wrong, he was the first one to point out. He'd pull me aside and say, hey, look, you can't be doing that. Like I said, we'd go out to eat and just hang out. And a lot of people don't let a lot of people into his little world that he has. And I was fortunate enough to be one of those guys. But talent-wise, he was probably the greatest player I ever played around, talent-wise. I'm just saying with natural abilities, the size and to be able to play the position he did, the best person I've been around athlete-wise to be able to do that and say that. Now that there's guys that are coming up now that have that ability. But, Alex was just a giant. He was just a big kid. Out of high school, he was, 6'4" or something, 6'3", 6'4" out of high school. He's just put together, and he could just – and I know, like I said, there are the extenuating things that go with him. But that stuff aside, talent-wise, he's probably the best that I've seen.
Kevin, I'll get you out of here on two quick questions. I'm watching Sunday Night Baseball the other day, and your former team, the Rangers, Bartolo Colon, 44 years old, is throwing a perfect game into the eighth inning. And part of me gets it. Like, it's cool to see a guy who's overweight and is 44 having a perfect game against the world champs. And the other part of me is like, people forget that this guy was once suspended for performance-enhancing drug use, and that doesn't seem to follow him around. He's got this cult following. How do you view players who have had a positive test?
You're right. That does follow them around. But, the people, it's funny, the guys that came out, said, hey, yeah, I did it. You don't hear about it anymore.
Yeah.
That's it. Unless something like this comes up. But the guys that never admitted it, I'm sure there's a lot of guys that I played with that did it, that never got caught, but I could tell and go, he was on something. And this, how I look at it is, gosh, it's hard. It's hard to even, you know, I'm sure there are guys that took jobs away from people because they were on, you know, HGH, and I, you know, would take it because, you know, they would playing a day game after night game. Oh my gosh, your body didn't want to do it. But, yeah. You know, the guys taking that stuff would feel like they were, you know, their first day of spring training. So I understand, you know, doing that, and that kind of stuff just needs to be out, but it won't ever be, because as long as people have money, there are always going to be people trying to mask it. And that's the hard part.
A lighter question to get you out on. Your nickname was Shrek. You had the biggest head in baseball, size 8 cap. Did you like that nickname, or am I bringing up a sore spot here?
It didn't bother me. You know, if it helps the fans relate, you know, a lot of people around here do it. You know how the whole thing started? It was right when Shrek came out, and we were in spring training, and it was Rusty Greer.
Yeah.
Who started the whole thing. And he said something during stretch. We were talking about, he goes, you know, you look like Shrek. You know, I said, you're full of it. It's never going to fly. And he walked right in and told the media. And ever since then, it just kind of had taken off from there. So, I mean, I hear people all the time here telling me that. Some guy even took an old school baseball helmet and painted it Shrek's head and everything. And I hit with it one day in BP.
Well, if it makes you, you got company, our co-host on the station, Arnie, he looks like the villain from the Despicable Me Disney movie. So if you've seen that, that's what he looks like in human form. So Kevin Mensch, 8-year major league veteran with us here on the Huddle. Kevin, we appreciate the time, the perspective, the stories.
Yeah, I have one question for you guys. What's going on? What's more important up there right now? The Celtics, the Bruins, or your Red Sox? I know my Eagles had to take it to your Patriots.
Yeah, that's very true. People soar about the Eagles. I would say the Celtics are way down the totem pole because of all the injuries. I would say the Bruins people are pumped about, but I still think universally it's the Red Sox. After the best start in franchise history, I think that takes the cake, Kevin.
Yeah, but always remember, guys, it's not a sprint.
Yeah.
It's a marathon.
And the Boston
Marathon. How you start, how you finish.
And the Boston Marathon was yesterday. Kevin Mensch, we appreciate it.
Thanks, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Good guy. Yeah. Ranger, Blue Jay, Brewers, Nationals. How long did he spend in Major League Baseball?
8 years.
Eight years. So. And he had a couple of years there at a very young age where it looked like he was going to be a masher. He was one of those all-or-nothing guys. I think he hit 26 one year, 25 another year.
Really Despicable Me. You had to throw that in there.
And he agreed.
Gru was his name.
You know, that guy, and I'm not kidding around, looked just like my old boss, Tom Bigby.
Kevin Mensch?
No, the Despicable Me guy.
You look exactly like Despicable Me.
So did my old boss.
You know who else you look like? George the Animal Steel.
You have to show me. I've heard of him.
Okay.
Yeah, I know he's a wrestling guy.
Yeah, right? He is. You look a lot like him. Same head.
They used to say I looked like three people. Jerry Cooney. Remember Jerry Cooney, the boxer?
Yeah, with less muscles.
A little bit Jay Leno. Jay Leno-ish.
If you had hair and a chin.
Well, back then. And Kevin James, back when I had a little bit of hair.
Maybe.
No?
My college roommate is a spitting image of Kevin James.
Really?
Yes.
Look up George the Animal Steel sometime.
Pull it up. I'll come over and take a look at
that. He's a handsome lad.
Is he?
Oh.
Good-looking guy.
Dashing debonair.
I expect nothing better
than that. There's a reason they call him the Animal.
Kevin Mensch, good interview. I always like getting perspective of former players. You know, and some of the stories they could tell. He said, A-Rod looked out for his back. Is that what it was?
Yeah, he said he loved A-Rod. He was in A-Rod's circle.
I do look like him. I do look like him.
Yes, you do. I'm showing him George the Animal Steel.
I don't know if I'm as hairy as that guy.
Yes, but, well, we don't know and we don't want to know. Yeah.
Well, in the summertime when I take my shirt off.
He was famous, I think. I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago, but I think he was famous for eating the turnbuckle.
Is he still alive?
I have no idea. Doubt it. No, he's dead.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Gone, but not forgotten.
You want to hear something embarrassing?
Yeah.
Your wife just texted in and she spelled your name wrong.
Oh, she called,
your wife just called you Artie.
Yeah. Shocking.
Can we get the mistake of the day and put it on her?
She was probably texting that to her boyfriend, Artie. Yeah,
it was Artie.
Yeah, exactly there. All right, Brady, what do we got coming up next?
Celtics getting ready for the Bucks in game 2. We'll talk about that.
Next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local slant on all things sports.
We know that everybody's going to be gunning for us.
It's the Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
I remember now, trivia tonight at the Burger Bar. Come on by, half-price appetizers on all the appetizers there. That includes the wings, so come on by.
Does that include potato, what are they called? The potato wedges?
Yes.
What are they?
All those. The tater tots, the wedges, all of
that. Oh, my gosh,
stuff.
I had them last week. Unreal.
I'm
with
even
bacon bits?
Brady, you're hosting, right?
I am hosting.
Brady's hosting. And
how are the questions?
My wife did them. I have not looked at them. I think she made it a little bit harder this time because people were getting way too many right.
Right. Yeah, it was real easy last week.
Because when Rich got them all right, then you know there's a problem there. So Burger Bar, get there 7:30 and the hangout. The games will be on. And then, of course, you can hang out and watch the Red Sox and the Angels, Bucks and the Celtics also at game two tonight. So I'm looking forward to that. And Celtics they got lucky. Not lucky, I shouldn't say that. They won game one. That's behind them, but they still have to do what's at hand, get game two, otherwise they lose home field advantage, home court advantage.
Yeah, and it's going to be a tough matchup today, and I'm really interested in the coaching back and forth, the chess game that's going to go on here. A lot of talk about the Bucks maybe going to a small lineup, basically ditching John Henson, their center, not using Tyler Zeller, who only played 4 minutes in the first game, but basically the Celtics playing biddy ball and trying to get small on the court and trying to just make Giannis Antetokounmpo, the five, make him the center, let the offense flow through him and play with four shooters around him. I'm interested to see how that would work.
I don't know if they have to make major changes either because, I mean, this is a team that went into overtime and, granted, they probably never should have gone into overtime anyway, but I think they're just on the equal right now with what the Celtics have out there. So I don't know if I'm going to make major wholesale changes.
Well, Tim Legler brought up an interesting point today. If they had known that Antetokounmpo and Middleton were going to combine for 66 points in that game, they would have said, we won this game easily. The fact that they did get 66 between the two of them and they lost is immediately saying to Tim Legler that, you know, that's sort of an uh-oh situation. It could be a red flag. And what that says to me is you have got to get Eric Bledsoe into the flow of the offense. I mean, he was miserable the other night.
Yeah, he was bad. And I look at it the same way from the Celtics, though. They had four players get 20 points and almost had a fifth because Jason Tatum had 19 and they had to go to overtime. So I think that same argument works for both sides. If I'm looking at a team that gets four players with 20 points and nearly has a fifth with 20 points, I'm thinking we had to have run this team out of the gym, but yet it ended up in overtime. So I think that argument goes both ways. I think the lineup is a big thing to me that I want to see. If the Bucks go small and that allows them to get Jabari Parker on the floor more, and Parker only played 5 minutes in game one and did nothing, if he can play more, you would think that is good for the Bucks, but I think if the Bucks go small, that plays right into the Celtics' hands because I look at it and say, Horford is not really a big as it is. So he plays small, matches up with Antetokounmpo. Then Rozier, Brown, Tatum, I like that four right there. And Marcus Morris is a perimeter-oriented big. I think going small actually favors the Celtics big time.
I know you're not a big Vegas guy, but if you are a Vegas person, Vegas is saying that the Milwaukee Bucks are kind of actually favored to win this game because the Celtics are a one-point favorite. Only reason Celtics are a one-point favorite is that home court advantage. Right. I think it's worth 3 to 4 points, I believe, in basketball. So they're saying on a neutral thing, this is Milwaukee's game to win. If Milwaukee was playing at home, they would probably be about a 2 or 3 point favorite. They're seeing another toss-up in this game. I don't know if I think Boston learned their lesson. I don't know if it's going to be as high-scoring as the first game was. I thought that was a little surprising. Did you not think?
Well, it went overtime.
It didn't take away the overtime, but was still over a 200, was it not? I mean, yeah. Because the over-under's only 199. If you want to make a lot of money, then bet the over, that's for sure.
I've always thought in seven-game series that game two is absolutely huge. I mean, in this game, both sides, this is the momentum swing game. Boston wins tonight, they take control of the series. Milwaukee wins tonight, they take control of the series.
The other thing I want to see is, what does Giannis do offensively? Because we have known for a while that he's not an outside shooter. That's certainly not only is, you wouldn't even say that it's an unrefined part of his game. Right now, it's almost a non-existent part of his game. He got to the free throw line, hit a bunch of free throws. He was 0 for 4 on shots outside the paint in game one. Can he do anything outside the paint? And is he even willing to try at this point?
I'm not changing my game right now in game two of the playoffs. I've got to work in that the offseason. I'm going to go ahead and he should continue doing what he's doing. I mean, the outside shot's not going to fall for him. That's going to take a long time.
Yeah, but if I'm the Celtics, am I going to just pack it in and say, okay, well,
I'm going to guard him straight up. If he's going to get his 26 or 30 points or whatever it is, so be it. But as long as the other guys don't beat me, I'm not worried about that.
But make it a little tougher for him to get inside.
Well,
my gosh, he just walked around every minute.
He's done that all year, though, to everybody. Right, it's not that easy.
Right. That's why he is the Greek freak. I mean, he's a guy who's, 6'11", who plays like he's 6'2", a la Ben Simmons. But, I mean, it just seemed like it was All he had to do was get by one guy, and the next thing you know, with that, well, with those long arms of his, he was laying everything in.
And that's the reason why the Bucks would go small. That if they are going to play him straight out, then you guard him high, out high with Horford, then you help on him when he goes by and he kicks out to a shooter. Or you sag in on him and dare him to basically run at you and take it from, you know, and bait him into the outside shot. Well, you're going to sag in, then other people are going to be open on the perimeter, and that's why Milwaukee would go small. I still don't think it's in their best interest because I think that plays right into the Celtics' strengths.
You know, the Raptors can lose today. They had a tough time with the Wizards. This is going to line up for the Celtics and Philadelphia, but Philadelphia losing. If the Celtics win and go up 2-0, they have just as good as anybody else's chance of making it to the conference finals. Now that Philadelphia has lost a game.
Yeah.
Now that Cleveland lost their first game. We'll see what happens with Toronto. But, yeah. I mean, it's wide open for Boston right now.
Who had Miami winning that game last night in Philadelphia? I couldn't believe it when I saw that score. And I didn't see the game. I was at a concert. But I understand there was a huge lead, and they almost came all the way back. But how does that happen?
Well, Dwayne Wade. That's
Dwayne Wade had, like, 25 points in 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, 28 points. Yeah, he was phenomenal. The old Dwayne Wade.
So, you know, but you're right. I mean, if just one of these teams can get upset, that certainly could help the Celtics' path.
All right. Moving along. Last story standing before we finish out the show. So that's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
I don't know if this should be a surprise, though I'm guess surprised we haven't done this earlier, but the Alabama High School Athletics Association approved today they're going to start using instant replay. They're going to say, yeah, high school. Why do that? Why? You got a problem with that?
Some huge controversy in a big game this year?
No.
Something?
Matter of fact, they said several states, including New Jersey and Minnesota, have used or plan to use replay in championship games, but Alabama is believed to be the first state to have instant replay available for all high school games. So
it can't be in every sport. There's no way.
No, but no. Well, I thought it was just football, but I don't know. Maybe it is going to be every sport. I just assumed it was going to be football because it was Alabama. That's the reason.
It's inevitable.
If it's going to be there in football in Alabama, then it's going to be in Texas. They got to be next. Texas is so big in football. Yeah. It's disgusting.
Don't bring that to Vermont. There's already the press boxes are already crowded enough Friday nights.
I wish football was high school football was better here. I mean, you know, where you had a lot of D1 prospects and stuff like that.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of them coming through. But they have won 2 Shrine games in a row.
I don't know that there's ever been a Division I football player.
Yes, the quarterback. Remember from UNLV that went to Middlebury.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, he actually technically came from Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Came from California.
And did you guys see the sketch Stormy Daniels, who obviously in the news?
Yes.
Did you see the sketch?
I don't know who that is.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know who Stormy Daniels is.
He says with a smile on his face.
She did the sketch, I guess, of the person that supposedly gave her the money. Have you seen the sketch?
No.
Do you know who it looks like?
Who?
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, exactly like Tom Brady. I don't know if she had Tom Brady on the brain or what, because you describe it to a sketch artist, and they draw the picture, and it's viral, Rich. You got to look it up. But it's like, is that Tom Brady?
Great, more sketch artist controversy than Tom Brady. Didn't
remember last year? Yes.
A few years ago during Deflategate, he shows up in court, and they were unhappy with his sketch.
The sketch artist drew a... Made him look handsome enough.
Right. Other than the chiseled god that
and
he is.
She had to apologize. She had to apologize for not making him handsome enough. Unbelievable. Brady, who gets the mistake of the day?
Alex in Moncton.
Alex in Moncton. Bravo. Bravo.
So Alex in Moncton with the mistake of the day. He's joined by Michelle and Underhill, yesterday's winner together. All of them, those two and three more that we'll get throughout the week. They will be up for the Mistake of the Day Championship of the Week. That's that brand-new baseball cap, thanks to Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms.
All right, want to thank him for that. So, wow, quick show today. We just cruised on by. Any interns to thank today, Brady?
Logan.
Oh, that's right, intern Logan. I forgot.
He got you water before the show.
He did get me water, so thanks, intern Logan.
Even though you're closer to the water.
Yes, I know, but he has to do something to just sit here and talk hockey with us. thanks to Brady. Thanks to Rich. I'm Artie. Champlain Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.